I understand that you already had three speakers before me, so if I give you a little rest and you can sleep through this, it's no not so fair. If you are hardcore insomniacs and won't be able to get any sleep, you're going to have to listen to some different Torah. Okay, the topic is Shalom Bayis. I want to first define the term. Most people think that Shalom Bayis is a home where nobody ever raises their voice. Everything is quiet and serene. No one ever argues. Everything is very, very peaceful. That does not describe Shalom Bayis. That describes a cemetery. Shalom Bayis could be a home where there are differences of opinion, where people even voice their differences loudly and argue with each other, with one condition, and that is that everybody's concerned about the shlemus of the home. Shalom does not mean peace. Shalom means shlemus, perfection. And perfection is only achieved in this world. The only thing that is perfect in itself is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, things have to work together in a group effort, in a team effort, to make perfection. And many different things work together to bring perfection to the world. Shalom Bayis is where all the players in the home, father, the mother, who are also husband and wife, children who are also brothers and sisters and children to parents, all work together in harmony to see to it that the home is working as a unit. That is Shalom Bayis. And that means that there are problems that have to be solved and nisyonos that have to be encountered and overcome. And just the opposite. Somebody who understands that and therefore takes all of the problems into consideration and knows that this world is not a world that's problemless. It's not the purpose of this world. Takes that into consideration, eventually be able to overcome those problems. Somebody who thinks that there are no problems and therefore doesn't prepare for them will never overcome them. The Shir Das, Tozer Rosh Yeshiva, says that is the concept of tzaddikim omri ma'at va'osim harbe, because they know that they have a yetzer hara, they can't control everything, and there are problems in this world. So they don't promise you a lot. They promise a little, hoping they can do it. But because they anticipate the problems, they're able to overcome them. Rishayim don't realize there's any problems in this world. They think they can control everything. They don't realize they have a yetzer hara that can prevent them from doing things that they would like to do. So they promise the world, but because they don't anticipate the problems, they're not able to overcome them. So therefore, it's bedafka. Shalom Bayis is something a person should realize, that no home is without its problems, without its nisyonos, and the way to deal with that is to deal as a family unit together in harmony in overcoming those difficulties and those problems. And that is what a mishpacha is. The word mishpacha has a connection to the word nispach. In modern Hebrew, in modern times, a nispach is an attachment. You have an attachment to a file, it's called a nispach. Families are attachments. They are a small society. People learn how to function in the larger society by knowing how to function in that smaller society called the family. People learn how to exert authority, parents to children, how to receive authority, children to parents, how to get along with people of equal level, parents to each other, and how to get along with siblings also. All of that is part of the relationships that exist within the family, but the family is a microcosm of the greater society. And the way that you learn how to deal properly in society is by learning how to deal with the attachments and the relationships within the family. And this is perhaps the most important institution in Klal Yisrael. I always like to say, We have a Beis HaMedrash, a Beis HaKnesses, and a Beis HaSefer. Everything starts with the Bayis. You don't have a Sefer and a Medrash and a Knesses, you have a Beis HaSefer. First you have to have the house and the home. And after you have the home, then you can have a Sefer and a Knesses and a Medrash, and all the other things come from that. But the foundation of everything in Klal Yisrael is the Bayis. And that's why the Shechina in the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, came Mibein Shnei HaKruvim. Where did the Shechina devolve? Between the two Kruvim. What were the symbolism of the Kruvim? One was male and one was female, which symbolized the fact that Ish V'Isha Shechina Shruya Beinehem, and they also had the faces of children. So there you had the whole family. You had husband, wife, and the faces of children, and that was where the Shechina was, and that's where the Shechina is in Klal Yisrael. B'Shochanti B'Solchan. The Shechina is not in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is the vehicle to bring the Shechina in the hearts of every Jew, but most specifically in the Jewish home. And that's why Chazal say that the Beis HaMikdash has different designations. Avraham Avinu called the Beis HaMikdash a har. He was a yochid. Avraham Avinu, echad hoya Avraham. He came to the Ribbono Shel Olam as an individual. And an individual goes up on a mountain, separated from everybody else, and that's his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avraham Avinu saw the Beis HaMikdash, which creates that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a har. Yitzchak Avinu was the first shidduch, Yitzchak and Rivka. He saw the Beis HaMikdash as a soda, as a field. A field is something that you work on and is fruitful, and that is a marriage. And Yaakov Avinu already saw the Beis HaMikdash as a bayis, and that's how we call it. We don't call it Har HaMikdash or Sde HaMikdash. We call it Beis HaMikdash because that is the Iker institution where the Shechina comes to Klal Yisrael. And in order to create Shalom Bayis, like we said, is not an easy thing. You have to work on it. Now, Shlomo HaMelech, whenever we sing Eish Yischayil Friday night, the women stand around with a very pleasant smile on their face that they're being praised. But if I was a woman, I would be very insulted by Eish Yischayil. What does it say? Eish Yischayil Miyimtza. Who can find an Eish Yischayil? They are very rare and hard to find. Yet Shlomo HaMelech contradicts himself because he says, Rabos Bonos Asu Chayil. Many, many women became the Sheikhayil. So if a lot of women became the Sheikhayil, how come they're so hard to find? Were they hiding behind trees? Why is it hard to find the Eish Yischayil, but Rabos Bonos Asu Chayil? I think the answer is the following. Pearls, Rachok Mipnini Michra. Pearls, if you're lucky, you find an oyster with a pearl in it. And if you're not lucky, you don't find an oyster. You find an oyster with an oyster in it. You can just find pearls, but you can't find an Eish Yischayil. They don't grow on trees. But Rabos Bonos Asu Chayil. If they work on it, they can, many, many Jewish women became the Sheikhayil, putting in a lot of hard work. But they just can't be found. You can't just find one. They don't grow on trees. They don't come easily. You have to put a lot of hard work into it. And it's interesting, I once saw that how do pearls formed? Why are some oysters have pearls and some don't? Because the oysters that have pearls, grains of sand permeated their shells and irritated the oyster inside. And the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the oyster a secretion to put around that grain of sand in order that the irritation should go away. That secretion is called mother of pearl. And that secretion hardens around that grain of sand, and that's where pearls come from. So it always comes out that only the oysters that were irritated and had problems produce pearls. The oysters that were never irritated don't produce anything. So it takes a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of preparation to be able to create a home where there's taka shalom bayis. And I want to give you a few general ideas about what shalom bayis is. Any book that claims to be able to guide somebody in specific ways of how to have shalom bayis or how to raise your children, or for that matter, pretty much anything else, those books are pretty much worthless. Except they do have some value. If you have a child who's too short to reach the table, you can put it under him, and he'll be able to reach the table. But to read them is pretty much a waste of time. Because Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that there are no klalim in Torah. There's no general rules. And even that's not a general rule. There's only pratim. Every situation is different. People are different. Homes are different. Conditions are different. Everything depends on people. For some people, this would be a great plus for Shalom Bayis. For other people, it may be a tremendous minus. Depends on people's character. It depends on their circumstances. It depends where they are. A million different things. So therefore, even though I'm going to give you some basic general ideas, but how to apply them in any specific case needs hadracha. Hadracha from friends, hadracha from rabbonim, hadracha from mechanchos, in how to apply these general ideas to your specific situation. So let's start with a Rambam. I'm going to read you the Rambam. And the Rambam outlines what the ideal relationship between a husband and wife should be. And the Rambam is in Hilchos Ishus, Perek Tezvav, Halacha Yud Tes and Chav. And I want to warn you ahead of time how to listen to this Rambam. The Rambam first speaks about the responsibilities that a husband has to a wife, and then he speaks about the responsibilities that a wife has to a husband. Normally when I speak about this, what happens is the wives listen to what the husband's responsibilities are, and the husbands listen to what the wife's responsibilities are, and then they go home and attack each other. Hey, the Rambam says you're supposed to do this. How come you don't? And the other one says, the Rambam says you're supposed to do this. How come you don't? And I end up causing tremendous lack of shalom bayis. The way you're supposed to listen to this is the opposite. The Rav Meir Shapiro, Lublin Rav, said the following. It says, Ki im besoras Hashem chefzo, person should want and desire the Torah, Torah Hashem, uvesoroso yeg yom v'laila, and he should toil in his Torah day and night. Says Rav Meir Shapiro, in every relationship, there are two Torahs. Example, Reuven loans Shimon, or let's say Rivka loans Leah money. Okay? So Rivka is the lender, and she has her Torah. She can't take interest. She shouldn't pressure the Leah to pay back if she knows she doesn't have the money. That's the Torah of the lender. What about the person who takes the loan, right? The borrower. So the borrower has their Torah. They have to scrimp and save and make sure they pay back on time and have gratitude towards the person who lent them the money. Now, if Rivka keeps her Torah, and she's careful not to pressure Leah to pay back and not to take interest, and Leah keeps her Torah, and she scrimps and saves to pay back on time and has gratitude towards Rivka, Shalom al Yisrael. The problem becomes when Rivka says to Leah, you're supposed to scrimp and save and pay me back on time. And Leah says, you're supposed to not pressure me and not take interest, and then there's problems. So everybody has to keep their Torah. So listen more carefully. The reason I'm telling you both is that you should appreciate what a real Jewish home is. And this is the ideal. And to reach that ideal does not come easily. It comes with a lot of work. So what does the Rambam say? I'm going to read it and then I'm going to discuss some of the points. V'chein tzivu chachamim she'odem mechabed es ishto yoser migufo. Person has to honor his wife more than he honors himself. The ohav akigufo, and he has to love her like he loves himself. The miyesh lo mamon marbe betovasa kafim amono. If he has the means, he has to buy her presents and give her money according to his means. The lo yakel oleha ema yaseir. He shouldn't intimidate her and make her afraid of him. The yegiburo ima benachas. He should speak softly to her. He shouldn't be depressed or agitated. That is how a husband has to deal with his wife. A A woman should honor her husband more than enough, whatever that means. We'll see. More than enough. Yoser midai. How much is enough and how much is more than enough? We'll see. V'yeh aleha mora mimenu. She should stand in awe of her husband. V'tase kol maseh apiv. She should do what he wants. V'yeh be'eneha kamosaro melech. She should look up to him like a prince and a king. Mahalechas betaivas libo. And do those things that he desires. U'marcheches kol mashiyisna. And stay far away from the things that he does not like. V'zeh derech benos Yisrael, b'nei Yisrael hakdoshim, b'tahorim, b'zivukam. This is the derech of b'nei Yisrael, of b'nos Yisrael hakdoshim, b'tahorim, in their marriage. U'bedrachim elu yeh yeshuvam noy meshubach. This is the way that they'll be able to exist together in a very, very proper and pleasant way. Okay, let me mention some of these things. First of all, the idea of love. What's love? The word ahava in gematria is echad. Love means that you have a feeling of oneness and affinity to the thing that you love. You feel it's part of you. And that is the goal. That a husband and wife should mamish feel like one person. Ishto kegufo bal keishto. The halacha is that a husband is considered one with his wife, and a wife is considered one with her husband, like one person. And that's the goal, to reach that. And that's why, but even though they're one person, they're not mamish one person. They're different people. They are, it says the achdus is called ki'ish echad bileiv echad. It doesn't say ish echad bileiv echad. It says ki'ish echad, because they're different people. Women and men are very, very different. They're different in their makeup, physically, spiritually, emotionally, very different. So they're only ki'ish echad. They're like one person. But b'leiv echad, they have one heart together, one goal, and that's what makes them one person. So how do you reach that? How do you reach to have that affinity, to have that commonality? And in fact, the Svarim say that that's the goal. That a husband and wife, mama, should feel like one, like the relationship between a right hand and a left hand. And there's a story of Rabbi Levine Zatzal, that his wife once had problems with her legs, and he went to the doctor with her, and the doctor came out and said, Rabari, what is the problem? He said, my wife's legs hurt us. That's how a person has to feel. That their mama's like one person. Mamish one person. They can empathize and feel what the other one feels, both good and for bad. So how do you reach that level of ahava, of oneness? So here are some general ideas that are important to remember. The first thing is, let me introduce it with a question. When you hear an answer to a question, it makes more of an impression. There's a holiday in the year called Tu B'Av. One of the reasons we celebrate Tu B'Av, and Chazal say, Lo hoyu yomim tovim liYisrael kechamishoser ba'av u'kiyom ha-kippurim. There were no greater holidays than Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av. Yom Kippur, I understand, the Gemara says, was a tremendous holiday because of Kaporas Avonos, person gets Slicha, and it was the day the Torah was re-given. So it's a tremendous Simcha. What's the Simcha of Tu B'Av? What's such a happy day? And that day they made Shiduchim. Women went out and they looked for Shiduchim on that day. They went and danced in the vineyard, and that's the day they made marriages. Why? So Mara says very strange thing. One of the reasons is because that's the day they buried Haruge Beitar. Beitar was the last stronghold. After the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, there was hope that maybe the merit of Bar Kokhba would be successful, and they would throw off the yoke of the Romans, and they would rebuild the Beis Hamikdash, and Bar Kokhba would be Mashiach. And the last stronghold of Bar Kokhba was in Beitar. He was killed, and hundreds of thousands of Jews, men, women, and children, were killed. And the Romans were so cruel that they didn't let them bury the bodies. The bodies remained exposed for 3 years to the elements. 3 years later, on Tu B'Av, a miracle, two miracles happened. They were able to bury the bodies, And the bodies had not decomposed in those 3 years. Because of that, they made a new bracha in benching, the fourth bracha, Tova Meitiv, and they instituted a yontif of Tu B'Av, and that is what's it called, and they make shiduchim that day, tremendous yontif. Now, I don't know, but if I would have been there and they would have asked me what to do, I would have said, look, this is not really a reason to rejoice. These people didn't come back to life. They're still dead. So you're able to bury people and their bodies didn't decompose. So I would have said like this. This is a day of mourning, burying hundreds of thousands of Jews who died, who were killed, and left mercilessly by the Romans for 3 years. So I would make this into a fast day. But since there was a little bit of good, Lamaisa, they were able to be buried and their bodies didn't decompose, you could eat 10 minutes early. That's what I would have said. Why did the Rabbanan make such a tremendous yontif for something that doesn't seem that it's something to celebrate? I think the Chachamim were telling us a lesson, and that is the following. Many people come into this world and they think that they have a guarantee of total satisfaction. They're born and on their little toe there is a guarantee, right, that comes along with them. You are guaranteed 100% satisfaction in this world, or you have the right to complain. And that's how most people function, right? If they sit down to eat a meal that a woman prepared, the wife, a mother, and beautiful meal, plenty of food to eat, you don't have to scrounge around in garbage cans like some people do for food, or eat potato peels like some people had to do during the Holocaust. If they had that, you have a beautiful meal. What do people usually say? Too salty, not salty enough. How come there wasn't this side dish or that side dish, or the salad didn't have this in it? So 99% it's great, and that 1%, that's what people complain about. Chazal wanted us to know there's going to be a long galus coming, and there's not going to be 100% satisfaction in this world. And if you're not able to be happy with the 1%, what can a person complain, geverach, if he's alive? Be happy with the minimum. If you have 1% good, be happy with that. Don't complain about the 99% you don't have. And most people, if they have 99% good, complain about the 1% they don't have. So the first thing is hakaras hatov. Recognize good. Recognize the fact that not everything is coming to me. I'm not entitled. Nobody promised me anything in this world. The Rebbe Shem gave us a present called life. If he gives you nothing more than that, then that in itself is a present. That in itself is something to be makir tova for. And if you have anything extra beyond that, be happy for it. So therefore, the Chachamim made a yontif where 1% was good. But they said, celebrate that 1%. Don't look at the 99% that's not there. And if you don't understand that, you can never have a happy marriage. Because if you're looking for total satisfaction from anything in this world or from anyone, no one in this world is perfect and no situation is perfect, and you're never going to get 100% satisfaction. Okay, since this is being taped, except in my situation, my wife for sure is perfect and provides 100% satisfaction. But otherwise, right, doesn't work. So if you're looking for the perfect husband, right, he's also looking for the perfect wife, and neither of you are going to find it. So if you're looking for perfect situations, they don't exist. So the first cloud of being happy and being able to feel an affinity and to feel that you were zoche, right? That we make a bracha, sheva brachas. One of the sheva brachas is kisamechecha yitzircha began eden mikedem. Should make the chosen and kala happy like he made Adam and Chava. And they say the idea is Adam and Chava knew there was nobody else. This was it. Adam knew there was no one else in the world except for Chava, and Chava knew there was no one else in the world except for Adam. And the Rebbe Shem brought them and let Adam realize there was nothing else. Took him through the whole zoo, he couldn't find a mate. Only Chava. So each chassan and kala to feel like that, there's nobody else. Right? Good, bad, indifferent. This is what I have to make the best of. And except, again, under certain situations, there are exceptions to every rule. But that's the way a person has to look, be makir tova for the small hakaras hatov. And that way it's possible to have a good marriage. So they made marriages on Tu B'Av. That's the first thing. Second thing. In this week's Sedra, There's a Daz Zakenim Bali Atostas that explains the following. It says that if you have an animal that is a trefa, trefa means specifically a wild animal, a wolf, a fox, a lion came and mauled one of your sheep, and the sheep now has a hole in its lung or a hole in its brain or whatever, it's still alive, it's treif. If you shecht it, you can't eat the meat. It's treif. That's called a treifa. So what do you do with meat that's a treifa that you can't eat? Torah tells you what to do with it. Lakelev tashlichinoso. Throw it to the dogs. So you're all familiar with the Medrash. The dogs kept quiet by Yetzias Mitzrayim, so they were zocha to get the treifas. The Daz Zakenim says, what's pshuto shel mikra? Why do we give it to the dog without a medrash, pshuto? The pashut is that herds of sheep are usually accompanied by sheepdogs who guard the herd from wild animals or other dangers that could come from the outside. Ganovim, they want to come and steal. So the dog is a guard dog. So since in this flock you now have a sheep that you can't eat, so show the dog some gratitude and give him, he's been guarding this flock, right, many, many times, so give him the benefit of a sheep that you can't eat, give him the meat. There's only one problem, and that is, you know why you can't eat that meat? Because the dog didn't do his job. Because had he done his job, he would have sent the wild animal and chased it away. But he didn't chase it away, so he was unsuccessful. So you're now going to reward the dog for not doing his job? Says the Daz Zakenim, yeah. Because not 10 times other times he did do his job. And he was successful. So one time he wasn't. So that one time is not going to erase all the 10 times that he was successful. So still show your gratitude and give him the meat. Now, think about it for a second. How many times do you have friends for years who do you favors, who are very, very fine friends, and then they do something not nice to you? What is usually the reaction? Wipe them off my list. I don't have anything to do with them anymore. You don't treat a dog like that. How can you treat a human being like that? So people live together, and inevitably they do a lot of good things for each other. But sometimes they do things that the other one doesn't like. Don't look at that one time, or 2 times, or 10 times. That is negative, and wipe away and erase all the good. If you want to really have gratitude, then you have to have gratitude despite the fact that it's not 100%. That sometimes people do things that are not nice one to the other. People live together, they have a lot of chances to do a lot of things to each other. Most of it is good. Don't let the little bad erase the good. Because you don't treat a dog like that, you surely don't treat a human being like that. And therefore, part of that is Don Lekatzkos. That is that a hint? Don't always assume that somebody did something with bad intentions. People sometimes do something without thinking, or they say things without thinking. And if you're going to take it to heart and assume that they had bad intentions and they really meant it, then those little things can blow up into very, very serious arguments and serious detriments to Shalom Bayis. If you're Don Lekatzchus, if you're supposed to be Don Strangers Lekatzchus, certainly somebody should be Don their husband and wife Lekatzchus. And even if they did something that appears to be not so nice, give them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't mean it. It wasn't with bad intentions. They thought they were doing something nice or whatever. And last general thing, and then I want to go to at least to explain this idea of kavod, what kavod is. Cheshbonos, it says, person bo v'nase cheshbonos shalolam. Schar mitzvah keneged hefseda v'hefsed mitzvah keneged schara. Always make the calculation of the loss you're going to have by doing a mitzvah opposite the reward, and the reward you'll get from an avera, meaning the benefit, opposite the loss, and you'll come out to do mitzvahs and not do averas. Why do you have to make any calculation? Just tell me, mitzvahs are good, averas are bad, do mitzvahs, don't do averas. What's kind of calculation? Well, the answer is that nothing in this world is totally good or totally bad. It's all a mixture. The chachma is to know how to balance out what the majority is. Is the majority of this thing good, or is the majority bad? And therefore, should I do it or not? And if even there's a minority of bad, maybe I can compensate for that. And do it in a way that I compensate for that little bad that's in a mitzvah. And if there's a benefit from an aveira, maybe I can not do the aveira, but compensate that I should get that benefit in another way. So this world is a world of cheshbonos. And that means that sometimes there are situations where a person feels that he has to make an argument. He has to, what's it called, has to stand up for what's right. But he has to make a cheshbon. Maybe by winning this battle, I'm losing the war. Maybe it's not kedai to make a big deal about this, because in the long term, I'm going to lose more than gaining by making a big deal about something that's not a big deal. Sometimes you have to make a big deal. Some things are big deals. Some things are principles. And you have to put up an argument. But not every battle is important. The main thing is that you win the war. So some battles you have to lose. And you have to be able to make the calculation, where is it kedai to make a battle? Where is it kedai not to battle? Because the general overall picture will be better if I don't make a big deal about this thing. Those are some of the general rules of how a person can ensure themselves shalom bayis if they work on these things, and they don't happen easily. Like we said, rabos bonos osuchai. You have to work on it. Okay, it says that a husband should be mechabed his wife more than himself, and a wife mechabed her husband more than enough. Let me tell you what I think that means. Kovid, what is kovid? Kovid is not necessarily what you do for somebody, it's what you consider them, and because of that you do various things. Like the Gemara says, you can feed your father and mother pisioni, which is, what's it called, the pheasant. Very expensive meal, and get Gehenim for it. And you can force your father or mother to work in a mill, and you get Gan Eden. And the Gemara gives a maisa. There was a son who used to bring his father very expensive food every day. And one day the father said, where are you getting all this expensive food? And the son said, shut up, old man, and just chew and eat. That was not covet. Even though he gave him really expensive things, but he didn't consider his father important at all. And that wasn't covet, and just the opposite. The father, every bite he took, felt terrible that his son was bringing him these things, but didn't really want to. And then there was a son who was alone with his father. He supported his father. He worked in a mill, pushing a mill, hard work. And then the father got a tzav from the king to come and work for the king, which is open-ended. The son's job was 9 to 5, but working for the king is open-ended. So the son told the father, I'll go work for the king, take your place, but you have to go work in the mill, otherwise we'll starve to death. So he put his father to work in a mill, but he did it because he considered his father important. For that he got Gan Eden. So it's not so much what you do, it's more or less what the intention is behind it. And therefore, men are different than women in many, many ways. I'll give you an example. I don't know if it applies to all men, but I'll give you an example that I know applies to me. Right? I couldn't care less if the couch is in this corner or that corner. As long as there's some place to sit down, I don't care what color it is, right? What it looks like, right? As long as there's some place to sit, I have to sit on the floor, that's fine. But my wife, women in general, are very much aesthetically inclined. And it makes a difference to her what color the couch is and where exactly it's situated and what it looks like. Now, if my wife asks me, where do you think we should put the couch, or what kind of couch should we get and what color and what exactly, right? So I could say to myself, who cares? But I could say, if my wife cares, kavod means kaved, heavy. Heavy means that something occupies a space and you can't just push it around. It's important. That's what kavod means, to show that you consider somebody important. And even if for me it's not important, but my wife considers it important, then a husband should consider it important too, because his wife is important, and what she considers important should be important to him too, because she's important, even if the thing itself is not that important. That is what it means, that he's mechabit his wife more than himself. in things that himself he wouldn't care. But if his wife cares about them, he should give her the respect and honor that what's important to her is important to him, because she's important. What's a woman? Mechabed is baila yoser midai, more than enough. Sometimes a man on the outside doesn't get too much respect. People don't respect him. They don't consider him anything important. But his wife knows that he has a lot of milas that people don't see. So in that case, she should give him more respect than he gets on the outside, because she knows on the inside, right, that he really deserves that respect, even though people don't give it to him. On the other hand, sometimes just the opposite. That a man gets a lot of respect on the outside because people don't really know him, but his wife really knows him and knows that he doesn't deserve that respect at all. Then she should give him the respect that he gets on the outside. Always yoser midai, whichever one is more. If what she sees is more respectable than what people on the outside see, she should give him the respect of what she sees. If what she sees is less respectable than he gets on the outside, she should give him the respect he gets on the outside. That's called yoser midai. That is because husbands and wives are different. Sometimes what they think that they're showing respect or whatever to the other is not necessarily the way it is. I remember I once bought my wife some jewelry, which was on sale. That's the reason I bought it. No, but that day, what's it called? It was on sale, and I really thought it was exquisite. And I gave it to her, and she accepted it like it was. She's been waiting for this for like her whole life. And really felt good. About 2 weeks later, one of my teenage daughters came to me and said, "Tati, do never buy mommy jewelry again without asking us first." I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "What you bought our mother was for like an 8-year-old girl, a 9-year-old girl." Right? I said, "What are you talking about?" When I gave it to her, she was ecstatic. I thought this was like what she'd been waiting for her whole life. It was some kind of little dogs and cats with, I don't remember what it was. At the time, I really thought it was nice. She said, "Did you ever see her wear it?" 2 weeks have gone by. I said, "No, I thought she's saving it for like a special occasion." She said, "She'll never wear it. That is fit for an 8-year-old. I wouldn't wear it," she said. So, look, my wife was mechabed me by not saying that's the most ridiculous thing I ever saw in my life, go return it immediately. And I thought I was being mechabed her. Sometimes you can not be on the same wavelength, but the thought, right, makes a tremendous difference why you're doing that. And if the person understands you're doing it because you consider them important, that's called kavod. Okay. I never bought my wife jewelry after that without bringing my daughters with me. Okay. And here also, a husband should not be intimidating. He shouldn't be depressed. He shouldn't be agitated. On the other hand, a woman has the responsibility, if her husband is depressed, to try and cheer him up. And to try to calm him down. And there's a very big cloud that husbands and wives should not necessarily share everything with each other. This idea, right? A husband goes to the Beis Medrash, he goes to work, and somebody insults him or does something not nice to him. The best thing is not to report it at home. Why? Because for the husband or the opposite, the wife, they deal with these people on a regular basis and they'll forget about it by tomorrow. But if a husband comes home and says, "This guy called me an idiot, and this guy did this bad thing to me," the wife's going to take it a lot harder than the husband, because she wasn't there. She's going to champion her husband's kavod, and she's going to cause this and blow this into a tremendous machlokas. It's not kedai at all, right? Or the opposite, the wife will do it. Or what's going to happen is, if every day the husband comes home and says, "This one called me an idiot, and this one called me an idiot," or whatever, eventually the wife's going to say, "You know what? Everybody can't be wrong." Right? So it's not a good idea to divulge everything where there's no purpose to it. Husbands and wives should share many things together, but a husband has a responsibility to try and make his wife happy by not coming into the house with a face that looks like the world came to an end, and that infects everybody with melancholy. Right? You're smiling, people smile with you. When you look like the world came to an end, you make other people feel like that. On the other hand, if things happen and people are not in control all the time, and they also feel, they do feel bad, then a wife's job is to make her husband feel better, to cheer him up, to calm him down, or whatever. That which the Rambam says that a woman should do everything that her husband says, that is not to be taken literally. A woman is an ezer kenegdo. Some learn that to mean the following. Zocha, when he's zocha, when he does what's right, then she's an ezer. She helps him do what's right. Lo zocha, if he's doing things that are not right, then kenegdo, then she helps him by being against him, by not helping him do things that are not right. So she should do, it says, isha ksheira osa ratzon baila. It doesn't mean that she fulfills the will of her husband. It means she makes the will of her husband. A smart woman knows how to make her husband think that that's what he wants. She makes that ratzon. And therefore, if the ratzon is good, she helps him and supports him. If his ratzon is bad, then she helps him by going against it and making sure he doesn't do things that are harmful to himself, to his family, or whatever. So even though it says that she should do kol maaseh al piv, it means that she should, the Gemara says that a person should be a person who's ma'ura the mabriya, sociable, lasos kirtzon ish v'ish, to do whatever anybody wants. Everybody wants to do whatever they want. It tells the Rosh Yeshiva that's impossible. Sometimes this one wants this thing and somebody wants the opposite. You can't do what both of them want. You can't accommodate everybody. How could you be lasos kirtzon ish v'ish? He says what it means is the following. There's two different attitudes. Somebody asks you for a favor. Some people's initial reaction is, no, but I'll think about it. And some people's reaction is, for sure, but I have to think about it and see if I can do it. That's what your attitude is. If your attitude is, I'd like to do whatever you want, but sometimes I can't because what you want is not proper. So a woman should want to do the ratzon of her husband. That is the main thing. But sometimes, because it's not the proper thing to do, she has to oppose him. She has to help him not do what's wrong. But her initial attitude is, I'd love to do whatever you want, whatever makes you happy. But sometimes I can't. I have to think about it. Not the attitude should be, I can't do anything, but sometimes I'll think about it, maybe I'll decide to do it. That's not the proper attitude. In any case, I just want to end with a medrash of how important creating a good family is. The medrash says like this, L'mishpichoseihem yotzu min hateva, that when they left the teva, they left family by family. Mikan sheyotzi mibeis hakneses mishpachos mishpachos. When you leave shul, you should leave by family. We don't daven together, but when you leave, you should leave, family should leave together. What's the connection? What's the simple meaning of the medrash? The word teva means a boat. But in the Mishnah, the teva was the Aron Kodesh. So, Mishbechoseim Yotzu Min HaTeva, when you leave the teva, when you leave the Aron Kodesh, leave by families. In English, that's still preserved. Because Noah's Ark is called an Ark, and the Holy Ark is also called an Ark. So when you leave the Ark, leave by families. Okay. What's the real meaning? We live in a world where we are surrounded by floodwaters that threaten to drown us, all kinds of yetzer haras and all kinds of terrible things and all kinds of dangers. And you can't escape them. No matter where you live, they're there. The most you can do is create a teva that is watertight, that won't let those negative influences in. You can insulate yourself. You can't isolate yourself. What are those tevas? Shuls, bati medrashos, seminaries, kehilos, those are the tevos that keep the floodwaters out. But you can't stay in a shul your whole life. Can't stay in a base medrash your whole life. Can't stay in seminary your whole life. Right? I know it's beginning to feel like you're staying here your whole life, but in any case, we're almost finished. So how can you leave those tevos and still be protected? That's what the medrash says. L'mishbichoseihem yotzu min hateva. If you create a family that has the same values and standards as the shul, as the kehila, as the yeshiva, as the seminary, then you can leave the mothership and still be in a lifeboat, right, and be protected. So the Mishpach will say, if you want to be able to leave those tevos safely, you have to be able to create families that become like the lifeboats of those arks. And the ikar of the family is a woman. The Gemara says, La'olam lo karasi le'ishti ishti el le'ishti besi. My wife is the home. She creates the Jewish home. When it came to Matan Torah, the women were approached first, and according to the Marsha only, that the women were approached if they wanted the Torah, Kosomar the Beis Yaakov, and then the women would influence their husbands and children to receive the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu only spoke to the women, according to the Marsha. He didn't speak to the men at all, because he knew if he can convince the women, they'll convince the men. They lead their husbands and children to Torah. And that's why the Medrash says there was once a tzaddik and a tzaddikus who were married. And they got divorced. And the tzaddik married a rishita, and the rishita and the tzaddikus married a rasha. And in the end, the tzaddikus made her husband the rasha into a tzaddik, and the rishita made her husband the tzaddik into a rasha. And the Medrash says, in case you didn't get the message, mikan shehakol toli beisha. Everything depends on the woman. So the woman is the ikar of the home. To create real shalom bayis and to create the shlemus of the bayis, the woman has the major role. And therefore, it's because of Noshim Tzikonios that we went out of Mitzrayim, and it's because of Neshei Chayil as yourselves who will work on it and develop into Neshei Chayil in the schus of you who will bring out the coming generation, that Mirtz Hashem will be the generation that will be Mekabel Pnei Meshicheinu B'Meirav Yameinu.